from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning, all y'all. How you doing? Isn't it weird when Google asks you to give you your password again after they've known it 4 million times? I don't understand. Just trying to look at the calendar so we could see who's on next week. Always like to work backwards with these kinds of things. Next week, Tony Pantelaresco. We're going to do a show on inflammation. A couple other things we're working on. We'll have a whole roundup of shows for you next week. Tomorrow, Open Phone Friday. And that brings us to today. And I think you're going to enjoy this young lady we have on the show scheduled. I'm not sure. I came across Ingrid. Her name is Ingrid Nyman. And she's been a longtime student of medicine and ethnobotany, author of some books, including Cancer Salves, A Botanical Approach to Treatment. She has thousands of online journals, articles, and ranging from things like medical astrology, philosophy, dark field, microscopy. She has her own line of herbals, and Native American ethnic eclectic physician cancer treatments. Had some experience with some kahuna marunas in Hawaii. You know, they call them the big kahuna. The big kahunas in Hawaii. Studied Ayurveda in Santa Fe. A lot of stuff. Ingrid has about 60 websites and 35,000 pages or 3,500 pages online. Well, so we're just going to, I mean, obviously, we're going to have nothing to talk about with a lady with this puny little background. Good morning, Ingrid. How are you?
Hi, Patrick. That was quite an introduction.
Well, I don't
Thanks.
Know. I just made up that one. God love
y'all.
It. My 60 websites. And you've been really looking into the field of health and nutrition and healing, Ingrid, for a long time.
Yeah, for a young lady with 45 years experience.
Yeah, young lady with 45 years. Well, that's good. Well, you sound young. Yeah. My goodness.
Okay.
Yeah. My goodness, yeah. You have a lot of experience with Ayurveda. Who'd you study with Ayurveda medicine?
Dr. Sri Krishna Kashyap. He used to be a yogi in the Himalayas. He was really mystical compared to your normal Ayurvedic practitioner has memorized a lot of Sanskrit texts. They actually do memorize them. Mm-hmm. But he was getting all of his answers through meditation. And mm-hmm. also he ran an eye clinic in the Himalayas. And he was really very famous among yogis and sadhus and pilgrims of all sorts, and married an American, came to the U.S. and started teaching Ayurveda. Yeah. I was lucky to be one of his students.
That's great. Yeah, what mm-hmm. Ingrid's referring to, the real Ayurveda people, like my doc, he studied in India. It's a big, broad picture, isn't it, Ingrid, of spirituality. Everything. It's just a fascinating science if you can really find yourself a real authentic Ayurveda doctor.
Well, they all read the same texts and memorize the same ideas, but it's the most comprehensive system of medicine that I've ever encountered. because all parts are connected, your food, your emotional state, your spiritual practices, the weather, all of your habit patterns, mm-hmm. everything is taken as one body of knowledge. It's not all compartmentalized. So obviously it's a lot harder to learn than something that's all tidy, but it's also very thorough, mm-hmm. really thorough.
Yeah. Ingrid also has a website, one of the ones we're going to lead you to today, called Toxic Teeth, and what we'll chat about some of her experiences and with studying this whole dental idea, why we're here. So we're going to have fun. Here's the phone number if you care to join us. 888-663-6386. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com if you'd like to be on the show. And we already have some good, interesting questions for Ingrid. She's up in the Seattle area, just across the bridge from Bill Gates, where Bill Gates has coffee, like Starbucks. Oh, yeah. If you ever see Bill, you tell him hi for me, will you? Just say, sure. Hi, Bill. Mm-hmm. Hi, Bill. I got 60 websites, so he'd be proud of you. You know, a guy like Bill Gates. So tell me a little bit about your healing kind of thing. You had something from past life in your spine.
Oh, yeah, tell me that story. And so it's a very interesting story because, like many things that eventually come to the surface, it didn't come all at once. It was a little bit here and a little bit there. So I had this terrible pain in my back. Sometimes I would lie on the floor and I was just in tears, like sometimes for 6 days. Mm. And then I had a very tiny accident. In the hospital, and they injected me with something that had an anesthetic in it, and they didn't tell me. So uh-huh. I was driving home and just really having trouble holding the cars steady. And then I remembered that my mother said, take the birds in before the sun gets on their cage. And I stood up and I had the bird cage in my hand and I fell down. Wow. And I couldn't move. Hmm. And my mother was away, and 2 days later came home and got the story. And she took me to the hospital right away and asked them to x-ray my back. And the radiologist came out and said, you've got a hole in your spine. Were you ever hit by a bullet? And I said, no. And she said, you'd remember, wouldn't you? And I said, yeah, I would remember. And she said, well, here's the x-ray. And I said, oh, you must have it mixed up with somebody else. And she said, this is the only picture I've taken today. And so she repeated her question, said, when you were in Vietnam, you didn't get hit in the back with a bullet, did you? And I said, no. And then this past life came up where I was working in the underground in Austria and smuggling children out of the country.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I saw just really vividly two soldiers knocked the door down and had pistols drawn, and I was standing on the stairway, and they hit me in the back.
Wow.
And, you know, if it hadn't happened in that sequence, I wouldn't have been able to connect any dots.
Sure.
And so that was my Ayurvedic teacher, Sham, it was his nickname. He said that he could work on the nadi. The nadi is a part of the aura that has a perfect correlation to the nervous system. And he would tell the nadi to fill the hole in the spine. But he said if it didn't work within 5 treatments, I needed to get a spinal fusion. And I just had implicit faith in him, and obviously it worked. I haven't had any of that severe pain since he did this. And this was, oh gosh, it was like early 80s.
Uh-huh. And he did 5 sessions working with his
fully clothed. You know, I was face down on a old retired chiropractor's table. And he just did his hand movements over my back. It felt like paradise. I mean, was so relaxing, and you know, it's very, very soothing, and it worked. And I still have once in a while just a little kind of memory that, like, be careful, don't overstress my back. But I've never had to lie down on the floor and cry for 6 days.
And it just kind of healed itself, fused back up there, Ingrid? Or whatever.
I mean, I've never gone back for another X-ray because,
Who cares,
you know, right? I mean, every medical procedure has its side effects. So I didn't have a need to know on that level. I knew I was feeling better, and that was sufficient for me.
Yeah. Ingrid Nyman is here. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com, 888-663-6386. Well, in the realm of the teeth, I know that you've done some interesting research and writing on, say, fluoride and the pineal gland and stuff like that, right? Let's dig into that a little bit, because that's pretty interesting. So, does fluoride in the water inhibit the pineal gland's ability to do its pineal thing?
It's a little more indirect than that, but essentially what happens is that fluoride causes calcification, and so it starts, of course, in the digestive system, but it's quickly taken up by particularly heavy metals like mercury and aluminum, and it's carried throughout the system, but with an affinity for the brain and particularly the pineal gland. And so what happens is that when a baby is born, it has no damage to the pineal gland. And by the time the baby is like 3 years old, there's already fairly significant calcification. And the reason we know this is there was a time where there was just a tremendous amount of an undiagnosed problem called sudden infant death syndrome.
Yeah.
And there was one hospital where they actually did 12,000 autopsies on these children who died. Now I think most people feel that those deaths were caused by childhood vaccines, because they almost always occurred within a few days after being vaccinated. So it's pretty horrifying to think of a teaching hospital where they have that many deaths, but they were autopsying and finding that even in the first year of life there were already some signs of calcification of the pineal gland.
Really?
And that it was cumulative. So the older the individual was, the more calcification there was. And it correlated almost perfectly to fluoridation of water.
Hmm.
Now, Americans probably don't realize it, but we account for about half of the fluoridated water in the world.
Really?
And that, if you took all the people in the world who drink fluoridated water, that's a little over 400 million. About half of those are Americans.
And they still, different, I read all the time, or various city councils and counties are really promoting it, and some water's not fluoridated, and said, oh, we really need to get fluoridated. And that's happening in 2017. It's fascinating, isn't it? It's still going on.
Yeah, and it's hotly debated, because if we take just the statistics of cavities, which is what fluoride was originally introduced to control. I mean, that the argument was that fluoride prevents tooth decay. But if you compare the statistics, not with children from, say, 1945 to 1975 to 2015, et cetera, but you compare them to Europeans, they have the same rate of decline of tooth decay. So you can't actually say that the reason there's been a decline is that the water was fluoridated, because there's, I think, Ireland and is one of the very few European countries that fluoridates water. Within the EU, I think it's the only one.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Maybe as you get out a little bit to other places, and you find there might be some other countries. But in continental Europe, it's water fluoridation is very, very rare.
I'll be done. So, so on the pineal gland, we've heard the calcification. So I'm curious, the pineal gland, we, of course, understand, many of us and people write about and talk about it, the spiritual aspects, pineal gland, third eye. A lot of souls can leave their body in that spot. And so does the pineal gland have a physiological use, or is it all a spiritual thing?
No, it controls sleep, among other things.
Oh, good.
So it's where your melatonin is produced.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so a lot of people with sleep disorders actually have a link to some calcification of the pineal gland.
How would you know if your pineal is getting calcified, Ingrid?
It's very hard. I mean, the scientific studies that were done all involved MRIs.
Yeah.
So if we have some human evidence, not what they've done with rats and things, then people had to commit to before and after MRIs, and it's not something I would volunteer to do. Then you can actually then see if there's calcification, and you can see whether the treatment that you're using is effective or not.
Because you can go back and if you want to do another one, that kind of thing.
That's how science works.
You know,
you've got to have your before and after, or there's no evidence. So.
Sure. So is fluoridation, fluoride in the water, the only reason the pineal gets calcified?
Fluoride in general.
Yeah,
because it's not just water. It's all the things that have water. Like you have packaged food that was processed using water. You have plants that were grown with fluoridated
water.
They were watered with fluoridated water. You have a lot of beverages, particularly some of the sports beverages that are supposed to give you a lot of minerals and things. So usually mixed with a lot of fluoride. So you can almost say that the more processed a food or beverage is, the more fluoride it's likely to have.
Yeah.
And in addition, there's an enormous amount of fluoride in toothpaste. In the fluoridated toothpaste. And it's enough that if an infant were to ingest a couple of tablespoons, they'd be in pretty kind of life-threatening situation.
Really? It's that dangerous.
Oh, yeah. It's that dangerous.
Ingrid Nyman is with us, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. As you can tell, this lady's she's got it going on. I really think we're going to have fun this morning. So come around and join us with a question or so with the 60 websites. I have a feeling that she'd be happy to field and give you her ideas. And we don't do medical advice here or any of that stuff, but she can give you her ideas and theories on this and that, what you have going on in your body, and you can see what you see. And the email, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. This morning I have, they're really getting creative with coconut milk that you can purchase at the store. They have some new ones at the hippie food store I go to where this organic, and it's really, it's almost like handmade stuff, you know what I mean? And it's the best tasting coconut. I mean, it's like, man, how do they do this? And there's people getting very, very creative with these kinds of things in the world. I'm natural, so I like that. And I made myself a little drink this morning with coconut milk. This really nice coconut milk and two big heaping, more than heaping tablespoons or even more of colostrum. And a little bit of the cacao, the raw chocolate, just a dab of maple syrup. And then what else? Then I put a big glob of coconut oil in there too. And so that's my little chocolate milkshake I'm having this morning. This colostrum is a great product. If you've not tried it, you've heard us talking about it for years. And it's really a well done, very wonderful product. 6-hour colostrum. So it's the real six-hour deal, which is where all the real mojo comes 6 hours after the baby is born. And the growth factors, all kinds of immune things. It's really nice for the gut. Just boundless kind of ideas and things that you may feel better. Andrew Goss says his stomach has never felt better in years. And he just got so used to hearing me talk about colostrum. He went out and bought a big thing. And he said within a week or so, his stomach was feeling better. And it's felt in a long time where he would wake up in the morning. And it just didn't feel right, you know. Just to, you know, and but he said that's all gone now. So it's pretty cool. It's a great product, colostrum, and it's any of the Sir Thrival links on oneradionetwork.com. And then you can add it if you want to. Some mornings I'll put One World Way in the colostrum, or just have that by itself. It's another lovely product that Stephen Huer found. This fellow, this kind of mad scientist guy, that he's figured out a way how to make whey that's probably the most mojo way, I think, out there. And I think the cleanest ingredients, as low temperature as you can get and still get it into a can. And they got this whole encoding thing that this fellow does. It's a proprietary thing to make it more bioavailable and stuff. And it really juices up the glutathione levels, which is a really cool thing for, it's just a nice whey product, and it's grass-fed as well. And there are four flavors, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and unsweetened, unflavored. So that's a nice thing that you can put into your repertoire. You could do it in between meals if you want to put on some muscle. You can have it for a meal if you want to. You could use it for a meal replacement, or just give it to the kids too in the morning and before they go off to school, or whatever you do with the kids. And it's a fun thing. You put a little cacao in there. Well, they have a chocolate already, so I already got it. But you can add things to it. Some people add fruit. So it's a great product. Two of them, the colostrum and One World Way, on oneradionetwork.com. We have big news last week that the state of California, God love them, they're a little wacky out there, but this one, they got a pretty good idea. State of California said that they're classifying as of tomorrow, actually, as of tomorrow, glyphosate Roundup stuff as a cancer-causing agent officially for the state of California. So that's a big body blow to the glyphosate Roundup whole GMO thing. California is the fifth largest economy in the world, and the World Health Organization came out saying that the same thing two years ago, glyphosate Roundup, the whole, you know, that whole package, cancer-causing. So, of course, Monsanto will fight this to the death. If it sticks in California, it could be a real major body blow to the whole GMO movement, which would, you know, I think would be a good thing for people around the world. But here's the kind of science that they're going to be probably talking about as the Monsanto brings this thing. Probably will bring it to the state Supreme Court if we know Monsanto.
Previously, with research scientists at MIT, Stephanie Seneff, PhD, and the curious connections between these glyphosates, Roundup, GMOs, and sulfur.
So if you simply put the glyphosate in place of the glycine in the sulfur transferase, you will not be able to get the sulfate from the cholesterol sulfate to some other molecule, such as the heparin sulfate. The cell won't be able to defend itself with sulfate if it can't put the sulfate there. But it's really, really important to be able to do that because, for example, cholesterol sulfate, it delivers sulfate to the cells. But in order to deliver it, you've got to take the sulfate off of the cholesterol and put it on something else. And that's where the sulfur transferase would come in and wouldn't be able to do that.
I know, gets a little geeky, but the point is that without the proper amount of sulfur in the body, and now it's being disrupted because of the GMOs, even more than what it was already doing, it's not good. So we think that this sulfur product that we've been promoting is really helping people to keep everything kind of working well, because this whole sulfur cycle is kind of God's way of keeping the bad guys out and exiting the body. And because our sulfur is absolutely pure with no additives, it's different from almost all the other ones out there. You can click an order, three prices, right on our website, oneradionetwork.com.
Past guests have said that sulfur has a love affair with heavy metals. And when we get back, well I haven't prompted her on this, so she'll just give her honest answer, and we'll see if sulfur would have any good things to help decalcify the pineal gland. or then we'll find out exactly what we're going to do to decalcify this guy. Coming up.
Know the source. One Radio Network.
Wow. So loud.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Good morning to you. It is the 6th of July. Hope you had a nice July 4th day and hot dogs, popcorn, and apple pie and burgers or whatever people do these days. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So, you know, before I ask you about some of the things to decalcify this pineal gland, I'm often curious about this, and reading your background, I suspect you're going to have some opinion on this. The pineal gland idea and the spirituality with soul coming in and out of the body as third eye thing is, it's been talked about, of course, for eons, right? And spiritual works and all of that. And then some people conjecture, well, if your pineal gland is calcified, then that can inhibit your ability to leave the body and to see what's going on other places and stuff like that. But then, and I said, well, that's a curious idea, but I wonder what your theories are on that idea, Ingrid. Because if soul, you know, it's not a physical apparatus thing, so what would it matter spiritually if your pineal gland was just not happy?
Okay, so this is a really big question, and but think of yourself as inside an energy field,
right?
And the pineal gland is your physical mechanism for registering subtle impressions from your soul, actually.
Okay,
and so what happens is, this is like owning a radio that you can't plug in anywhere, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you have to have the pineal gland functioning. So let's back up a little bit, approach this in another way. When I've done music therapy with people where I've helped them to find out what their destiny is, you know, what's your mission in life? Why were you born?
Mm-hmm.
Invariably, they know. It's just they can't remember, and they're distracted by all the toys that we have, our iPads and our fancy cars and all the things we have to make ourselves happy. And then it's I get off on different tangents.
Yeah, well, let's stick with the pineal gland. Let's not go too far afield. So you're saying that if it's not working, let's see if I understand. The soul gets impressions, of course, from everywhere because it's mm-hmm. omnipresent and omniscient, right? Spirit, mm-hmm. we're part of spirit. So then, Ingrid, you're saying that to communicate what's going on in the body, controlling the body as soul does, it needs the pineal gland functioning right to do that?
Yeah, because all the endocrine glands are physical precipitations of the chakras. And so you have, each one is highly specialized, each endocrine gland is specialized, and the pineal gland is our connection to source. And so what happens when it becomes calcified is that you sort of lose track of why you're here. And it's a little bit interesting for me to compare this to an ayahuasca experience. I've never done ayahuasca, but I've read a lot about it. All of a sudden, people become aware of things that they weren't aware of, and they usually have a lot of regrets. My ambition has made me a little rough on people at times. I don't want to step on any more toes now that I understand we're all one.
I understand.
You know, they have different experiences like that, or you know, a new concept of the universe and how it came into being. I mean, everyone has a different experience, but all of that knowledge of the subtle worlds is outside of our normal range of consciousness, if the pineal gland stops working.
I see. I see. So that would account then maybe if modern America, you know, do not understand fluoride and how it works. And most people drink city water, right? Most people in the world, in the country, probably 90% of them. I don't know. I just made that number up, but it's probably...
It's very close to correct.
Is that right? So it's very possible that, God love them, these souls who are having a hard time anyway, just going to the docks and everything else and eating the diet, they're also having a hard time really getting some spiritual insights as well from soul and spirit, because of the pineal gland could be all kind of clogged up a little bit.
Clogged up is
possibly. Yeah. Is that possible? I mean,
it's and then they try to interpret the world in terms of just the five basic senses, rather than trusting their own intuition or where did that flash come from? Oh gosh, I wonder if I should take it seriously or not. Oh no, if I did, I'd be a goof.
It's easier to take all of this as being the only thing there is and more real.
Right. Yeah. And then we interpret a lot based on our vision. And so I had a dream last night. I'm just going to explain it. If you go outside at high noon, let's say, and you look at the sky, you say, there are no stars in the daytime, right? And so stars come with the night, and then they go away somewhere in the daytime. Oh, the sun goes away in the nighttime, and the stars go away in the daytime. So we are convinced that there aren't any stars, but actually they're stars.
Of course.
And we just don't see them because the sun is so bright. Mm-hmm. And I know you're interested in dark field microscopy because I've poked around on your website a little bit. It's the same in dark field because if you think of a regular microscope, really, really intense bright light, and so you look at a sample of blood and say, oh, the blood is sterile, right? I don't see anything here but some red and white blood cells. And then you use dark field, and all of a sudden you see all these things that were there all along, but you didn't see them. So what dark field does is it splits the light, so it comes in at the side, and you see a silhouette, and then the blood is just cluttered with things like parasites and heavy metals and bacteria and all kinds of things. Oh, I wouldn't want a transfusion for the life of me.
You know,
who said blood was sterile? Why do we run blood tests to analyze not just the chemistry, but the pathology of the blood? So there's a contradiction here that's very serious, but we're basing so much on what we see.
Uh-huh. Kind of like with the daytime and the stars, like you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. So is what we see correct or not? Now, what if we could see in the light? Not just in the darkness, but we could see in the light. This is what we're missing. We're missing that spiritual light that would reveal everything to us. And so you think, oh, well, what is a shaman, or what is a mystic, or what's, you know, a yogi or a witch doctor or, you know, a pundit of some type? These are people who have some insights into things that the rest of us don't see because pineal gland's not working. So when I was first getting into the endocrine system, and I was really concerned that the thymus gland and the pineal gland both became useless at a very early age. And I thought, well, the thymus gland is connected to our heart, and wouldn't we all like to have big, generous, open, loving, compassionate hearts? And the pineal gland was related to our spiritual destiny. So how do we recover our heritage? I mean, we were born with these things working, And then we lost the capacity to use them. So why does it happen? Fluoride is a deadly, deadly poison. It's poisonous at the level of 1 part per million. 1 part per million. So you know, dilute it, it's still a deadly poison.
Wow.
And
I had no idea it was that toxic.
It's one of the most toxic substances there is. And it's, sodium fluoride, which is what's put in our drinking water. It's a rat poison. And anecdotes are sometimes a little interesting and sometimes not. But I was working with a dentist who was developing protocols for the Navy, how to work on HIV-positive patients. And he was doing a root canal, and the blood gushed up, and he actually became HIV infected.
Wow.
And he gave up. He actually committed suicide by taking rat poison.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of like Socrates and hemlock, because he kept a journal. It was very slow. It was agonizing. His mother just flipped out when she found his journal. Mm-hmm. And
amazing. Wow.
Yeah, it's an amazing story, but so symbolic, because dentists use so much fluoride in their work.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he turned it on himself and destroyed himself.
Yeah. We've got a couple questions coming in about fluoride. Does fluoride store in the body?
It stores in the liver, the kidneys, the brain, the bones, the teeth. Whenever you have bone spurs, fluorosis of the teeth,
So the answer would be yes. It stores
yes.
A lot, a big yes. Yeah. So Yvette is listening this morning. Hi, Yvette. She says, is there a protocol for removing fluoride from the physical body?
Yes, we have to think of everything as circulating, and the studies that have been done show that they're measuring urine output, basically. They're seeing if you drink something like milk, which is sometimes fluoridated, by the way,
mm-hmm.
And then you excrete, how much of the fluoride came out with the urine and how much didn't.
Right.
Like, did you excrete more fluoride than you ingested or less? So, in other words, something that's going to remove fluoride from the body has to produce a side effect that your urine has more fluoride than what was known to have been ingested.
Okay.
Is that clear?
Yeah, that makes, it makes sense. Yeah. You take this thing and, boy, this makes more come out.
Yeah, so interesting now, if we go back to what you were talking about with your morning, I guess this is a kind of smoothie that you were discussing.
Oh, like colostrum colostrum and coconut.
Yeah, well, it's a cacao. Cacao is one of the foods that can be raw, not
right.
Not chocolate bars, right?
Sure.
But raw cacao is a very good we can say detoxifying agent among foods. There are herbs and that are maybe stronger than foods, but there's something in herbal medicine called the doctrine of signatures, and that basically says if it looks like the part of the body, it's good for that part of the body.
Yeah, that's cool.
So what looks most like the brain?
The brain. The
walnut.
Let me see. Yeah, the walnut.
Walnut.
Yeah, the walnut.
Walnut. Yeah. It's very high in minerals that help to remove fluoride.
Huh.
So you want things that are high in magnesium, high in calcium, and then if, you know, high in iodine would also help a little bit. So Brazil nuts are another, you know, for sure. I'm equivocating a little bit here because I was in Ecuador and somebody from Brazil came with some Brazil nuts like I have never tasted
really?
Before. They were so delicious compared to what we get here. I mean, I was just gobbling them because they were so delicious.
It's good to know about cacao because we we love the raw cacao, and it's fun. And it's, you know, as you probably know, what's the name that David Wolf talked about? He's got a whole book on it, Food of the Gods, you know, theobromine and food of the gods and cacao. So it goes way, way back about people using it for all kinds of great things. Chocolate, go figure.
It's also a laxative. And the Ecuadorians take it for breakfast every morning.
Do they? Yeah. It's July 6, 2017 with Ingrid Nyman. So your favorite foods to get rid of fluoride from the body would be, let's see, cacao, walnuts, Brazil nuts.
A few more.
Okay.
Pineapple. Because it looks like the pineal gland. The pineal gland gets its name from the pine cone.
Oh,
and the pineapple
yeah.
looks a little bit like, we're talking miniature. The pineal gland's about the size of a pea.
Yeah.
But it's shaped like a pine cone.
Yeah.
And so everything is so symbolic. Nature talks through pictures.
Yeah.
It's not verbal, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's cool.
So, pineapple is another very good one.
And what if some of our listeners wanted to do something other than food and do some, herbs or food, but say like a tincture, stuff like that, to help get rid of fluoride? What would you recommend? You got some ideas?
Well, I've been working on this for quite a few years, and all of the, not all, but I think, let's see, if I go back a few years, that there were 27 studies on how to decalcify the pineal gland. 23 of those 27 were about tamarind.
Tamarind? I'll be
darned. Now there are a couple other studies that have come out, and so I've just formulated a new tincture called Iyer Decalc, for Ayurveda, Decalc for decalcification, that has Haritake, which is
Ayurvedic herb.
A fruit, tropical fruit, mm-hmm. that has it's a very strong antioxidant. If you look at the antioxidant ratings, the scores, Haritake is about second from the top.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
a fruit. Yeah, that's right. It's a fruit, isn't it, Haritake?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other one is very, very bitter herb, usually called chanca piedra, which is the Spanish, which means stonebreaker.
Yeah.
And so in South America, chanca piedra is used for kidney stones. And in Ayurveda, it's used to detoxify the liver, which is very interesting that this is exactly the same herb. It's originally from Africa. But the traditional uses are different. But anyone who has fluoride poisoning also has a liver problem. And so I put a little bit of this in with the Haritake and tamarind because we're trying to recover everything, not just the pineal gland, but try to recover health in general.
Yeah.
And
what's the name of that again? It's called
Ayurveda. Like a for Ayurveda.
I'm sorry. I was close. And what's the second part?
Decalc.
Mm-hmm. And
decalcified.
Oh, decalc. Okay. And they're going to want to know what website they can go if they want to try that. Where would you send them? Out of your 60 websites, where would you send them?
Yeah, toxicteeth.com.
Toxicteeth. Okay, and then you probably just have, I'm at the top of the thing here, probably have a shop. You go to your shop and find it there, huh? Are you a calc? That's really tamarind. Oh, good for you. I don't know much about tamarind. Do we even eat tamarind here, Ingrid, in this country?
If you go to Indian restaurants, you're going to get it as a condiment on the side.
Uh-huh.
So if you get something like samosa, you dip it in either cilantro or mint or tamarind. Usually they give you two little dishes, one that's sort of reddish brown and the other that's green. And so you're dipping it in there. You could have a tamarind chutney too. Ayurvedic medicine, it's used to control alcoholism, among other things. It's sort of like we use rose hips in Western medicine, mm-hmm. or Western herbal medicine. And but it cuts the desire for alcohol as well.
Kathy writes in to Ingrid this morning on One Radio Network, Ingrid Nyman. She said, I drank a lot of fluoridated water probably the first 30 years of my life, and I'm 44 now. How would I know if I do have some calcification of the pineal gland or fluoride poisoning? That's a good question.
Yeah, and again, unless somebody wanted to have an MRI, they wouldn't know. But there's the first symptom is usually fluorosis of the teeth, but this could be little tiny white dots on the tooth, you know, and it doesn't have to be the way the most shocking pictures are, where you see some child in a rural area that's got yellow or brown teeth.
Yeah.
But the little tiny white dots. But that may or may not show up. Osteoporosis is another, if you're doing like a bone density test. Sleep disorders are a common problem. And again, it's you can't say all sleep disorders are due
to... Of course, yeah.
Right. I mean, have you got a clock radio? Get rid of it. If you can... You make your room really, really dark at night, because we have a lot of light pollution, and the pineal gland will restore better in total darkness. I'll give another anecdote, because people are interested in this. I'm going to do a process in Ayurveda. It's called Kaya Kalpa.
Yeah.
And it's 40 days in absolute darkness.
Whoa. 40 yeah. days in darkness.
Yeah, absolute darkness. And do you take herbs? And most people take milk. I'm not going to do dairy milk. I'm going to do coconut milk.
Uh-huh.
And for a lot of reasons. One is that when I was working in India years ago, I met a lot of people that had marched with Gandhi. And that was pretty hard. Gandhi was very demanding.
Man on the move. Boy, he moved around.
Yeah, but his salt marches and things, I mean, it's just thousands and thousands of people marching for miles and months. And a lot of these people were very high caste Indians, and they were worn out at the end. And they convalesced on nothing but coconut milk.
Really? Oh, I've often heard goat's milk, but it was coconut milk.
No, it was coconut milk. The people I met in India, I was working in India from the 1968 on. I was working for the American Embassy there. The people I met had taken
coconut. So you're going to do...
Yeah, just put a straw in the coconut.
Yeah, so you're talking about the coconut water, right? Well, so if you crack a coconut and then put a straw in it, it's that more sugary liquid rather than a milk like we...
Well, it depends on the age of the coconut. And how fresh it is.
Yeah. Okay. So you're going to do 40. You're going to do 40 days mm-hmm. in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you do this?
I'm still deciding on a place. I have a couple of tentative ideas, I don't want to discuss all the details yet, because do it and then afterwards say, okay, it worked or
and
it didn't
then what's
work.
The but, general? You know, what's the general goal of this? Heard, of course, Kaya Kalpa, and there's a lot of rejuvenative techniques called Kaya Kalpa, and as you know, in Ayurveda. But so what is the overall goal would be doing the 40 days in the dark?
I have a big Neptune transit. I have Pisces rising, and so Neptune's going to be right on my ascendant, and I figure it'll be the most sensitive time in my whole life. So I'd like to just make the deepest possible connection at that time.
What a great idea. How fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you're going to have to talk to us after that and tell us the story about the 40 days.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Okay, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Here's an email from Steve. He says, borax or boron has been suggested to help detoxify fluoride from fluoride poisoning. Does Ingrid concur and have other suggestions? Have you ever heard of using boron or borax?
I've seen it all over YouTube. And I've seen both the people that are advocating it and the ones that are a little resistant to the idea.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it. the scientific studies, and I'm not saying that science is always right. I'm just saying that the scientific studies at this point have not addressed this. So if you go to some website like PubMed, you're going to keep seeing tamarind, and then a little haritake, and then phyllanthus. And so those are the main ones. India is doing an enormous amount of research now on herbs because they're trying to defend their patents.
Yeah.
You know, from biopiracy.
Yeah. So you've not seen any juice on the boron thing per se. We've had some people on the show that say it's really good to take a little bit of that every day, the borax, you know. But I guess there's not been a lot of science, because who's gonna study a detergent thing, right?
Well, everything has an affinity. So yeah, you could probably add to your protocols. Like, the first thing with anybody who's detoxifying is the eliminatory channels have to be in perfect working order or optimum working order. Otherwise, what happens, let's say that you have all this fluoride in your liver and you start mobilizing it, then it's going to go into the bloodstream and then unless you eliminate it, you'll reabsorb it and just park it somewhere else. And this happens constantly with people that are chelating mercury, that they're just moving it around. They're not getting it out of the body. So you always start with making sure that your eliminatory channels are working well. This is one reason for putting haritake in the formula, because haritake really is helpful in making sure that things are moving right. Uh-huh. It's a pretty strong purgative.
Here's an email for you, my dear. Please ask Miss Nyman to talk about a calcification of the spine along the various chakras. People have some pain problems in the back spine all the way to the neck, and how it can be healed and avoided, apart from plenty of hydration and breathing, of course.
Yeah, so what I've done with patients that have this, and I've even worked with some that were almost crippled, is started with things like herbal poultices and just sort of wrap them in herbs to try to loosen up a few things. And again, the whole issue with healing is that you can't just loosen something. You've got to eliminate it. Otherwise, you get really, really sick. So the body's pretty merciful. If you've got a poison, it's going to try to hide it somewhere. So if it can't eliminate it, it'll hide it. So you always want to start with a lot of really clean fluids, and coconut water or milk is good. You know, it hasn't been fluoridated, for one. It's natural. It's not like something that you buy some mineral concoction that's made with fluoridated water. Because you don't, where do all these food companies get their water? Are they distilling the water before using it? Are they getting spring water? You know, our herb laboratory uses spring water, but they're just using fluoridated water.
So I wonder. And go ahead.
Well, fluoride, sodium fluoride, is a byproduct of industry. It's a waste product, mainly from pesticide producers.
Yeah.
So if we go back to what you were saying about California and Roundup, these are products that pollute tremendously. They pollute our food supply and they pollute our bodies, and the soil and the groundwater and everything else. So the purer your source of nutrients, the easier it is to detoxify. So if you're going to use juices, you want to use juices from organically grown fruits and vegetables. And I get kind of fanatic at times. Like I'll put things in an ozone bath. you know, put ozonate the water and agitate it a lot and make sure that all the pesticides that might be on it and bugs and other things that, you know, if you live in the tropics like I have for 20 years, then you see things come to the surface of the water that you wish weren't there.
That's right.
And so better to put them down the drain, right? Yeah. You know,
so Ingrid, I'm wondering, dare I even ask the question because we'll do it. So I suspect that there's no real standards for what you use to water organic food, right, in this country.
I don't know.
I don't think there are. Maybe somebody knows that, but I think you can use fluoridated water to water your vegetables in California or whatever and still be organic.
I hate to say it, but also take things from an organic field and wash them in chlorine.
Oh, good. So on the fluoridated water, is there any science to show that there's residues of fluoride in the organic food that you get at the Happy Food Store from California or wherever?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a lot of science. So you get primary fluoride, like that's deliberately put in the water, which varies, of course, in its concentration depending on when they added it to the water because it's volatile. Mm-hmm. And then you have secondary fluoride that comes with anything from your toothpaste or the cements used in dental materials.
Sure.
And if you read the dental literature, fluoride is considered superior, right? When they're advertising to the dentist, they're telling the dentist, you want to use this one because it's fluoridated.
Yeah, I go. So overall, I guess we can conjecture that we're all getting a little bit of fluoride, even if we eat organically. So then the best thing you think to do would be to get on some of these foods you're talking about and to help to keep things moving. And then I would suspect then just by keeping your kidneys, liver, bowels and everything happening, that you're going to be able to keep moving this stuff out.
Yeah, and I have a couple of ideas here. But the first one is that the more processed the food is, the more likely there is that there's more fluoride.
Sure.
And more everything else.
Yeah.
Secondly, one of the herbs that's gotten a lot of press, and this is supported by scientific research, is that if your water is fluoridated, you can put some holy basil leaves into the water, and it will absorb the fluoride from the water, throw out the holy basil leaves afterwards, but the water is safe to drink after that.
Holy basil, holy crowbar.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've heard, and that's a very precious plant in Ayurvedic culture, isn't it? Holy basil.
Yes, yeah. And I don't know if other basils would be just as effective. I mean, basil's a kind of an interesting plant because it mutates so fast. You know, you get a lot of different subspecies and varieties if the plants are near each other.
I know you have to be careful too if you want to try to find a shower filter. That's going to get rid of fluoride. It's not easy to find one that gets the fluoride out.
Right, and it is absorbed through the skin, and so again, so it's ingestion and it's all kinds of other exposures. I read a study in China where they were measuring the amount of volatile fluoride per cubic meter of air.
Yeah,
and if the building materials in the space, like wood, where fluoride was used as a preservative in the wood, the amount of fluoride that people were inhaling was over the top serious, very serious. And so then the fluoride, of course, goes into the respiratory system and from the respiratory system everywhere else in the body.
Wow.
So you have to think of what are the blood cells doing in the body. They're picking up not just oxygen, they're picking up nutrients and transporting them all over the body. I do a lot of dark field microscopy. I love watching blood cells. And so the whatever gets into the bloodstream, which is plasma and blood cells, you know, blood cells are cells, you know, they're floating in a fluid, they're like fish in an aquarium or something, you know, that blood isn't a liquid. Blood is floating in a liquid. The plasma is the liquid. And so the blood cells are soaking up whatever's in the plasma, and then they're transporting it to whatever tissues need oxygen and nutrients, and then they're picking up the garbage and bringing them to the lungs and exhaling them. So, you know, if you have bad breath, then you know you're pretty toxic.
Mm. Okay, we got to do a little break here. All right, stay right there. Ingrid Nyman is with us. Her main website, and she has 60 of them, holy camole, is toxicteeth.com. And then you'll find other ones. You can Google her, and we'll put a couple other ones on the show page. And I see another one here, Ingrid Nyman. All kinds of things here. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Good morning. Open phones tomorrow.